What is going on, DGEN Nation? Kenny Kim here, bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast. It's Major Week this week for the PGA Championship from Southern Hills. I am with my boy, everyone's favorite Canadian, the Canadian Pitbull, Mr. Big Head himself, Tyler Tambourine. Tyler, what is up, my friend? Let's do it this week for a major.
Oh, man, I can't follow that up, Kenny. I love the hype. I love the nicknames. I love everything that goes with it. Excited to be back. I'm excited to be back with you with this much hype. I'm always excited for a major. Love the harder events like this. Last week, we'll talk about it. We get to the recap. Felt a little bit like John Rahm back at, I think it was the American Express, when he said these fucking putting contests, kind of like these fucking birdie fests. It's not anything wrong with it. I like the changeup. I got no problem with it. The course, none of that stuff that everything was talking about. But in general, definitely excited to get back to a harder event. That's where I seem to do my best. So I'm excited. Lots of $1 million prizes on the line this week. Lots of 100K plus prizes this week. We'll talk about our listener league. We'll talk about the Byron Nelson. But before we get into it, I want to remind everyone very quickly, this show and podcast is brought to you and presented by DraftKings. We'll have an offer later on for you guys from DraftKings Sportsbook. And then, of course, our friends over at Fantasy National, fantasynational.com/FGD. Get yourself 20% off your first month. Kenny, KH Lee, man. KH Lee comes through again. TPC Lee gets the job done. Craig Ranch with a KH in front of the reg at the top. This guy just does it, man. And what he held off was pretty damn impressive. When you think about the guys down the stretch, look, Xander probably wasn't going to be in there. It reminded me of Rory at the Masters. We're like, oh, he's coming back. He's going to win it. No, these guys have fucking 9 holes left at a course with all these eagles and birdies and everything going on. But quite the comeback from Xander from making the cut the way he did, almost a memorial-esque for many years ago when he was like +8, battle back, made the cut, finished 12th or something. Much better here, but there was lots of scoring to be had. But Decky, X, JT, all these other guys behind him. Scheffler was in the mix at one point there. And then, of course, Spieth, right on his ass, made that mistake there. What were your thoughts on the Byron Nelson? What are your thoughts on KH Lee getting the job done again?
I mean, it's sort of funny. It's a birdie fest, but the leaderboard at one point in time was like Spieth, JT, Decky, Xander, Scheffler, a few strokes back. You know what I'm saying? It was like the best players that played the field were up top. I mean, you know, so I mean, I don't know what to really make of that. It's always great seeing the Korean win. Always a fan of KH Lee, had a few shares. I'm trying to remember. There's been repeat winners more than one. This is not the first one this season. I think it's at
Sam Burns at the Valspar.
Yeah, and there might have been one more before that. I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, you know, three guys who've, you know, held their title for the previous year. It seems sort of rare. I didn't hate the tournament. A birdie fest is a birdie fest. There's going to be birdie fest. Yeah. That's just the way the tour is. I mean, everyone's playing the same course. I got no problem with it. And it ended up being good TV because, I mean, we had all the best guys up top. And then KH Lee, of course, coming through at the end. I mean, I have no problem with courses like that. We're not going to get, you know, Southern Hills every week. It's just, I mean, if that happened, golfers would burn out so quickly. Careers would end so much faster. If these guys had to play, you know, even par golf to win tournaments every freaking week, it just wouldn't be fun for these guys. You know what I'm saying? They wouldn't want to go out and do it, you know?
Saudi tour would be bumping at that point. Go, right? Lots of people that want to go over and just play their scheduled set events and just move on with it, make the money and go.
Yeah, I mean, I got no problem with easy events. They're needed on the tour. It gives opportunities to golfers who probably couldn't contend in even par settings, throughout, if they had to play that every week, week in and week out. So yeah, I got no problem with it. People will bitch about it. Just enjoy it. You know, it's not like it's every week. We've had, you know, a lot of tournaments that were a little bit tougher than we thought they were going to be this season. So I got no problem with it. It was a fun tournament to watch, lots of birdies. You just had to keep up and that's it. And, you know, that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'll say about it is I think it can only really be a downfall, I guess, or like, I can understand people tilting their lineups because it's like one eagle here, one streak there, one all 470 bonus. We're talking DraftKings, of course, scoring that. I get why that's tilting to you. Like, oh, this screwed me at the end, or, oh, now I'm going to wait and see this happen. But from the viewing perspective, like you mentioned, like once if you just take that out of it, I thought it was incredible down the stretch. Some, like, you got Cage Lee hitting like that Sergio-esque shot where he's like out of the dust and has to run. And the best is because Cage Lee, of course, has that great quote, right, where he works out hard, but he eats hard too. And so you see the little belly jiggling a little bit as he runs up the hill to follow the shot. And he plants it right up there with a chance at eagle and just little things like that down the stretch. Every shot matters that much more. Spieth puckering up and that triple bogey, like, you know, he could do it, but you're on the edge of your seat. That's like you said, all the dudes were in it. The best cream of the crop rose to the top. KH Lee, say what you want about him, but it's back to back with that field. And the people to go back to back at the Byron Nelson was like, I don't even remember what it was. It's like Sam Snead, two other just absolute incredible golfers from back in the day. Well known. I just don't remember the names exactly right now in front of me, but like KH is up there with them. And it just, you know, when you think of those three, you definitely don't think of KH Lee, but by all means, he got the job done. The other guys that were there, I mean, just a lot of guys in the mix. And like you said, a lot of big names, but it's going to be interesting, Kenny, bringing it across to this week when you have all these dudes, Spieth, X, Decky, and then of course JT and Scheffler right up there in the mix as well. DJ kind of did what DJ does.
Let me ask you, for how much are you taking last week for the golfers that played into effect this week? I think there's certain ways to look at it. Well, how are you going to go about that? Because I mean, you know, it's a totally different course, totally different type of game needed, but there are things that, you know, you have to be playing well going into these majors. I know Andy Lack has a podcast out. Great. I think me and you have both been on his pod. Really, really good stuff. And he was talking about Steve Banford, you know, one of his quotes saying that, like, since 2015, outside of the COVID year, you know, like every golfer that has won a major has played either one of the two events 2 weeks prior to the major. Also, like something like tee to green, I'm not 100% sure about these stats. Go to at Bamford Golf to double check these numbers. But he was saying something like, you know, a bunch of those winners were like almost 14 of the last 15 major winners were like finished top 30 in their previous event. All of them made the cut except for, like, you know, Phil last year. Or something like that. And then, like,
it was what you said, 14 out of 15, except Phil. And then Phil happened to be like first round leader or something. Yeah, so there was at least a semblance of form and then coming across. Go ahead.
And then, like, seven of the last 15 winners finished top 10 in their previous start, you know, leading up to their major win. So form is important. You know, I mean, especially when we're getting to a course where, you know, I don't think you can try and find your game. This is not a find your Southern Hills. It's not a find your game type course. So if you have to go play an easy ass course to get confidence in your game, to feel good with your ball striking, I think that can help, even though that course is nothing like the course you're going to play this week. What do you think?
Yeah, a couple things stand out. First off, the form is form. Like you said, the interesting part about a birdie fest and seeing all these top guys at the top of the board is that, like, that sounds crazy. And when you think about it out loud, you're like, of course, the best golfers scored the most. But what normally happens, anybody who follows it as much as we do or on top of it, like us in this bubble, the birdie fests are why the guys like Rahm or the Schefflers aren't just going out and winning it handily. Rahm at the Mexico Open a couple weeks ago, yes, he was a 3.5-to-1 favorite. Yes, he still did get the job done, but that was still tough to do because the scoring is out there for any of these guys to find. And we know how good a Sebastian Munoz, a Davis Riley, a Malnati even, James Hahn has been in the mix. And then people start eating chips and he starts missing down the line. But either way, these guys can all get to the top. So to have these guys in there still says something about where their game's at. Like you said, we're going to get to the course this week. You got a great course breakdown on it where it's not going to be easy. And that's for sure. And you can't come in with just half-assing it or like mediocre game. You're going to have your best stuff.
What do you do with the guys who you sort of like this week before last week, like Burns, like Gooch, like Willie Z?
I was just going to say that.
Cut.
Sure. That,
well, what are you going to do with those guys? Yeah.
It's more about the guys at the top. Those guys will still come into play. Like, I don't go away from them just because of that. We'll see where they land within my pool. But I was going to say the biggest thing that comes across for me is the ownership. Like, think about the ownership. But even though people were already going to like a Spieth, a Decky, a Xander type for this course, they just always like those guys going into majors. Spieth had the Grand Slam narrative, of course. Decky's just been finding his game, been healthy. Again, from what we've seen, like obviously the Masters, we were a bit worried. Now he looks great. And so that was going to come into play even before the final round and sort of what he did over the weekend. And then X just going off from just barely squeezing in to make the cut on Friday to come back and top five the thing. That's just going to boost ownership. JT, already popular, former PGA champion. So I'm going to take that into consideration when we're looking at guys around them, because while they're playing the best, this field for this week at the PGA Championship still has a lot of excellent golfers that, you know what, trends are made to be broken. Some of them will sit and will hold, but there's other great guys that you could play in those ranges where you don't have to fade them all. I'm just saying that will definitely influence the ownership for this week. And that's where I'm going to use it most.
Yeah. I think in these really, really strong fields, I think ownership is, especially up top, is more important than normal, just because you're getting guys who are elite golfers at lower ownership, you know. And a regular event, you know, that these guys, there's not going to be this many elite guys, and you're not going to have low ownership on them like you would. Like, I don't know, this week you look at Morikawa, DJ, Brooks, you know what I'm saying? Those guys are going to be probably pretty damn low owned, and they all have, you know, they've won majors here, a lot of them recently. So we'll see how that goes. I think ownership plays a part, but, you know, we'll get into that more as we get into these tiers and stuff like that. Before we get into anything else, we're going to do a quick, it worked out last time. We did a story time with Kenny classic for the Masters. We'll do another one since we tend to get a lot more newer listeners. This one is my snitches get stitches story. It works out well. Just because of the time of year we're in, it's Memorial. So this happened to me, I'd say, about 4 years ago, Memorial Day. We were having a cookout. And so nowadays, you know, I'm the single friend. I'm the guy, no wife, no kids, blah, blah, blah. So whenever we go to these cookouts, you know, all my high school friends and stuff like that, we get together, we do these cookouts. And basically, it's like a little kid fest. There's just kids running around everywhere. I don't understand how they do it. I don't understand how people have kids. Like, I do not have the patience. Like, I will fuck a kid up if I had children. I would just be, I don't know. My dad used to, when I was younger, my dad, you know, it wasn't like what he would do when I was a bad kid. I was a bad kid often. He'd make me, instead of, you know, a lot of people, you know, go get the switches, you know, go out and get a switch and they beat you in your hand. My father had a metal shoehorn hanging in the utility room. And so whenever I got in trouble, he'd be like, get the shoehorn. I'd be like, fuck. You get the shoehorn. I had to lift my pant legs up and just wrap me on the calf just repeatedly, you know, just wrapping me on the calf. And that's how he did it. And, you know, I had no problem with it as I gotten older. You know, nowadays you can't even do nothing like that to children. You're going to get in trouble, which I don't understand. So I could not have children because I just don't have the patience. I'd be like Bernie Mac and, you know, till the white meat shows, you know what I'm saying? I will fuck a kid up. Anyways. So we're at this barbecue. All my friends are there. So it's like 10, 15 kids running around having a nice little barbecue. And usually at these events, I tend to take care of the children for my friends because, you know, I look at them and they're like, they look like zombies, you know, trying to, you know, take care of these children all the time. I'm going to give them a little bit of a break, right? When we go to events like this, so they can like actually like have adult conversations and like have a drink without having to worry about if their children is going to die or something like that. So I usually take care of these kids. So we were at this, we were at a barbecue, you know, 10, 15 kids running around. They got this little playpen in the back with like a slide and like, you know, all that little stuff. And so me and my buddy were out there, we're having a drink, we're watching the kids mess around. So one of the girls, my buddy's daughter, he sees her, she runs up the slide, right? And so my buddy, he's a dad, typical dad, wants to keep her daughter safe, doesn't want her doing that anymore because he's afraid he'd get hurt. So, you know, he takes the girl away, you know, brings her, tells her to come by, and he tells her, you know, with me sitting next to her, like, you know, don't walk up the stairs. You're going to get hurt. Don't do that. That's something you shouldn't do. Okay. And so he goes away and he goes, you know, starts with his wife and all the guys, you know, they're inside having drinks, eating, and I'm outside and I'm alone taking care of all these 10, 15 kids. And I don't mind that, you know, for these events, I just feel like I should give my friends a break every now and then. So, you know, I'm watching these kids and this little boy, like he runs, you know, I see him and he runs up the slide, right? He runs up the slide. So the girl, my friend's girl, who, you know, he told her not to run up the slide. She comes running up to me, right? She comes running up to me and she points at that kid. He's like, that kid ran up the slide. He's not supposed to do that. So I grabbed her by the shoulders, looked her straight in the face. And I was like, snitches get stitches. Right. And she was like, what the, she was like, you know, googly eyes. She's like, what is this guy doing? So later on, I get a phone call. We all go home. It's night's over. We all go home. About, you know, an hour after I get home, I get a phone call from my buddy's wife, whose daughter that was. And she calls me. She's like, what did you tell my daughter? I'm like, I don't remember what happened. So I guess what happened was the daughter and her brother were in one room. Somebody spilt a soda, right? And the mom came in and was like, who spilt the soda? And the daughter ran up to her mom, looked her straight in the eye and said, snitches get stitches. And so basically that's what happened. And that wife hates me. All wives of my friends and all girlfriends of my friends hate me because I am the single guy that gets people in trouble. But yeah, so that didn't work out very well. She was really pissed off. She's like, don't talk to my children. Don't tell my children snitches get stitches anymore. My buddy thought it was hilarious. He was like, I'm glad you put some sense into her. But he's not going to say that in front of his wife, right? So just remember that. Snitches get stitches. Don't rat people out. That's a classic story time with Ken.
What did they expect? This is the second time I've heard, maybe third now. It's great. But what did they expect? Like, you're like, oh, I'm here to help them out. I'm the helpful friend outside rocking a Crown Royal and a cigarette. And they're like, that's the guy we'll leave our kids with. And then they wonder when they get home why they're saying snitches get stitches over something so little.
I would say that parents of like toddlers like that will take a break no matter what.
I have,
like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you've had kids, right? Like,
I would be like, probably like, not think like, to leave
should
them
we
with
leave him but... with Kenny? Be like, I'm so tired. Yes, we're gonna leave him with
we'll
Kenny.
Take, you know we'll what I'm saying?
We'll take the risk, but yeah. So just remember that. And so every time I see that girl now, I think she's like 10 now, 10 or 11. Every time I see her, she looks at me, she goes, snitches get stitches, and just says that. I wonder how much she says it at school and at work. I mean, it's a good credo to have. You know,
it's probably taught her a lot. Long term, she's going to be better off because.
All right. So let's move on.
Listener League winner.
There we go. I do not have it up. I cannot see very well still. So Tampa, why don't you pull it up and go over it? Yep.
Yeah. Before we get into this, I want to remind everyone for this week, go and sign up for the Listener League. The link will be in the YouTube video down below in the details on my Twitter at Toe Tag and Tambo. It's been retweeted at FG Degenerates on that Twitter. So it's out there everywhere. I think there's already about 400 or 500 into the 1250. They did make it bigger for this week. So it's 1,250 as opposed to the normal 750. They kept it very balanced. $750 up top, which is awesome. $75 to 10th. So 10% of the first place prize, very balanced, almost 17% get paid, extremely reduced rake. So it's a definite good setup. It's a $5 three max entry. Get yourself into the tournament of champions, where at the end of the year, we do a huge tournament of all the Listener League winners and you lots of prizes, money, tickets, things like that. It'll be better this year than ever, of course, with all the sponsorships and things that we have. So get yourself in there for that. And I was told today by my rep that if we can fill up the 1250 this week, we'll get it to 1500 for the next major. So that might be where it caps. We'll see. It's all about you guys and the demand. But if you're not in it, pause this, stop what you're doing, go there quickly, get your three entries in it. Let's fill it up as quickly as possible. Kenny, I'll read it out to you. The winner this week, the famous FS, had his three entries in there, he or she. Here's the lineup. 721 points, a very nice lineup here. So wow. JT, Spieth, Power, the winner, KH Lee, Brandon Wu, and Steven Yeager. So I love the two plays down at the bottom. Like, obviously, defending champion, Spieth, JT, I get all that. But solid build overall, completely skipped the 9K and the 8K range and used one guy at 6,900, Yeager, in the 6K range. What do you think of the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, like, I know Yeager wasn't, weren't you or Ryan on him last week?
Yeah, I love Yeager bombs. I said, we got to get back on this guy at Birdie Fest. Anyone who can throw up a 59 or whatever, like, that's the guy.
The funny thing is, I think I've rostered every single person in that lineup, of course, and, you know, I didn't have anything close to that. I rostered all six of those guys this past week. Didn't have anything, so I got to like it since I rostered them all, right? Pretty good lineup. Good way to finish. I mean, 720 points is a lot. It's a solid work. We'll make sure I didn't get the three man done last week. I'll make sure I get it done this week from now on. So we'll be good to go. We'll get you on that three man there.
For sure. That'll be good. Yep. And shout out to them. They're already into the tournament of champions. I added them up today and they accepted. So we're good to go.
All right. That sounds good. So let's get to this week. It is major week. So let's talk about the course a little bit. The second major of the year is upon us. As the best golfers in the world, they headed to Tulsa, Oklahoma. A little bitter because I was actually supposed to go. The whole stroke thing sort of put a damper on that. So that sucks. Tulsa, Oklahoma, PGA Championship from Southern Hills. Southern Hills last hosted a tour event in 2007 when Tiger won the PGA Championship here. The course has changed, you know, tremendously since then. So looking at that back then probably has nothing to do with what we're going to see this week. I mean, especially since Gil Hance had that major redesign in 2018. So basically what he did was we'll go over the redesign here in a little bit, but I mean, 2018, Gil Hance redesigned it. So taking any type of, you know, look at the 2007 is probably useless. You can look at 2021, where they did have the senior PGA championship from there. One thing you did notice was that only 8 golfers finished under par, and the course was like barely 7,000 yards. It was about, you know, 400 to 500 yards less than what we're seeing this week, and it was still playing that difficult. Now, the main comp course that I've heard for this for Southern Hills is going to be Augusta. You know, the traditional rolling fairways, bent grass greens, you know, fast, firm type conditions. That is what I've been hearing for comp courses, you know, wide fairways, bent grass, undulated, elevated greens, firm, fast. Now, while I do think looking at past Masters results could help, the big question this week is going to be the weather. As of now, there's possible 40 to 50 mile per hour gusts in the forecast. We're recording this, what, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock on a Monday. So it could change, but like the first 3 days, I'm seeing some crazy, crazy winds. It's going to make this course play exceptionally difficult. Throw in firm greens, and it's possible we see very few golfers under par for the week. Again, this is all wind dependent. If the wind stays away, I think you could see low double digits under par win this event, but I don't think the wind's staying away. So this could be a bit of carnage this week. When it comes to one trend that caught my eye, and this was, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier. This was by Steve Bamford, is that, you know, the fact that that other than the COVID year, every major winner since 2015 has played one of the 2 weeks prior to their major events, to their major win. Now, I don't think this is an end-all, be-all type trend, but some of the names that have not played the last 2 weeks include Tiger, Cantlay, Cam Smith, Kawa, Hovland, Berger, and Lowry. Now, Southern Hills, 7,350-yard to 7,500-yard par 70 with 2 par 5s. The par 5s, extremely long, with both playing over 620 yards. These will most likely be 3-shot holes for every golfer. And again, wind dependent. The par threes along as well with 3 over 220 yards. Now, because of the length of these 5 holes, it sort of makes the total length of the course just a little bit deceiving. Normally, when you see like a 7,400 yard par 74, par 70, you know, you expect a lot of long iron play, you know, say from 175 and up, like 30%, 40% or more, you know, going up in that range, maybe even 50%. But I don't think that's going to be close to the case this week. If you go on Twitter and follow at Model Maniac, he actually put up a little simulation where he did a simulation where he thought most approach shots should come from distance-wise at Southern Hills. He bought into different factors along. And if you go on his Twitter page, he has that little graphic for you. And according to him, he doesn't think any specific approach, yardage range, will have more than about 15% of approaches hit from that range during the week. So it's all spaced out. You know, usually, most weeks, you can usually pinpoint a specific range where most approaches will come from. But at Southern Hills, it seems like golfers are going to need, good from all proximity ranges. I know Andy Lack on his podcast said he thinks 150 and less is going to be extremely important. And, you know, that's not something that you really expect on a course that says it's going to be 7,400 plus yards par 70. So this is going to take into account every club in your bag this course, and that's why I like this course. It's going to be a fun week. Now, off the tee, golfers will see wide rolling fairways with bunkers guarding the landing zones. The fairways average around 40 yards wide, which is almost double what it was back in 2007. If golfers miss the fairway, they're going to have to deal with a 2.5-inch rough with some long fescue possible if golfers miss wildly. Now, the tree line is one of the major changes that occurred when Gil Hance redesigned the course. He eliminated a bunch of trees. So golfers now have some more room to miss off the tee before they have to start hitting out of tree lines. This is a huge difference from 2007. What we saw a lot of back then was less than driver off the tee. Now with the, you know, with the wider fairways and less tree trouble, golfers could be tempted to break out a driver a lot more. Now, this is not definite, though, as some golfers might decide to keep driver in the bag. And the next, in this next section, will tell you why they might do that. Like, even though the fairways are wide, it's still going to be very important to hit the fairways because of how firm the greens are going to be. Not much rain has fallen here. The greens are going to be firm. Now, even though the rough is light-ish, it's not crazy. 2.5 inches is not insane. But it is Bermuda grass in the rough, which is very difficult to judge the distance from. And also, it's very difficult, a lot of flyer-type lies with the Bermuda grass. Also, it's going to be difficult to hold the greens when they're this firm if you're anywhere on the rough this week. The greens themselves are bent grass and small, about 5,000 square feet on average. A lot of false fronts and runoff areas, which makes, the greens even smaller. So, hitting the fairways will be important this week, especially, if golfers want to have a decent green and regulation percentage. The bowl-shaped greens are going to be very firm since the area hasn't seen much rain lately. The highly undulating and elevated greens will also be super quick with a stimp of 13 or more. If golfers miss the greens, they're going to have to deal with bunkers and possible long up and downs. There are some golfers who've been on the course saying, depending on how far down the false front a ball goes, if they miss it, they can have like a 40-yard chip, with how fast these fairways and these greens are. And if they roll down that false front, they'll just keep going and they won't stop. And you're going to have, a 40-yard chip to on your third shot, or, you got to get up and down from there to make par. You don't have those shots that often on tour. Most of these pros don't hit that shot that very often. Now, I expect the greening regulation, once again, to be very low if the wind forecast is correct. So I expect a lot of short game prowess is going to be needed to contend. Hitting fairways will basically be the only way to hold these greens on approaches this week, unless we get some type of freak storm that softens the course. So overall, the type of golfer I'd look for this week is one that isn't too short off the tee, fairly accurate with the driver, has to have strong iron play and a strong short game. Pretty easy stuff, right? And it's easy to find every week. All right. So that's what I'm looking for. We'll see how that goes when we go into our tiers and stuff like that and who we pick. But Tampa, what are you looking for this week in golfers?
Yeah, you summed it up more than I could. So don't think we need to talk too much more on it. I think what you said is just what we're going to have to wait and see on the weather. That's the key factor right now. I'm just looking at it, pulling it up as we speak. And like, as of now, it actually looks almost like there's an AM PM advantage because of how crazy that wind is on Friday morning. And Thursday morning isn't that bad. Friday afternoon is where it just gets better than how bad the morning is. So we'll see how that plays out. Obviously, you want to stay tuned to what Kenny and I are doing throughout the week. Myself, I'll be on Mayo Media Network on Wednesday doing the live show chat, 12 Eastern with Mayo. And then Wednesday night, the premium show over at Run Pure Sports, where I'll be on with Big T, Uncle T, do a late night show, everything, going through exposures, breakdowns. We'll finalize all of that stuff. But I think for right now, Kenny, like you said, it's just we're back to another major. I'm always looking at sort of that long-term stuff. The recent form matters. Will be everything we talked about earlier with the trends and whatnot. But, there is still opportunity for spots where guys could potentially be over-owned based on something last week or the last little bit where it's like, oh, the narratives sometimes can get out of control. So willing to move off some of those as we go throughout as well. It does sound, and even just watching it today, the around the green game, we'll talk about it more when we segue into these first tiers after we do the ad read for the week. But I think just in general, like I saw Tiger today, a video of him out there, fried egg posted out. He's just planting the ball 30 yards away from the green on the runoff and just chipping it up onto the surface to see where he can land. He was putting everything like 1 foot, not to say go play Tiger, but to say they're practicing that stuff for a reason. It's going to be very prevalent. The greens are not extremely large. They're already sort of a little bit underneath what the average would be. And then on top of that, they're meant to be for that roll off to happen. So that's where you can expect. And that's going to be, something we talk about when we get to Victor Hovland, Morikawa types where complete game, top ball strikers, except what's their around the green game like, because it sounds like it's unavoidable here. So interested to hear your thoughts when we get into player by player. Before we get into the tiers and go through the segue to that, let's do the what do you say? Pay some bills, as you like to say it.
Hoops fans, the latest offer from DraftKings Sportsbook is too good to pass up. New customers can bet just $5 on any team and get $150 in free bets if they win. It's that simple. It's not often you get 30-1 odds on any basketball team to win their next playoff game, so that's some great value. DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also bet on the NBA with same-game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. Head to the app now and check out our picks. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code FGD. Bet just $5 on any pro basketball team and get $150 in free bets if they win. That's promo code FGD at DraftKings Sportsbook.
All right, so before we get to these tiers, let's do something for some comments. So, Tamba, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, we want to get a little bit more engagement as far as the YouTube is concerned. We, of course, want you guys to subscribe to the Mayo Media Network. We want you to like these videos. But we want to get the comments rolling, too. So I'm curious. I know when we go through these tiers, Kenny, especially at a major like this, the 8K range is just a range that naturally goes overlooked. We're going to love our guys up top. We're going to definitely know that all the chalk is congregating in the 9K range. So give us your favorite play in the 8K range this week in the comments. Well, like I said, we're working on a contest to have it out there, but we're going to take all of this into consideration. So put your favorite 8K player into the comments for this week. Like the video and subscribe to the Mayo Media Network while you're there.
Sounds good. Let's get to these tiers. Let's start off in a 10K range. We have Rory all the way to Scottie Scheffler. What are you going to do in this range? How many golf are you using? What do you think?
It looks like three. I'm not, again, fully certain on this right now, but up top, I'm just making a decision to go Rom over Scheffler. It feels like there's no, like, look, Rom will pick up some steam as the week goes on, but it just feels like for $200 more, everyone has the money to get to Scheffler. Scheffler has been the better golfer. I'm going from complete game, long-term, some of these tougher courses, all that's just what I do. And if I can get any type of discount there, I'm willing to keep chasing it. So I'll go to a guy like John Rahm. JT is going to be extremely popular. So if I'm going to play the guy that I think is going to be popular here, I'm actually happier to save the $700 and go down to Rory. And then the guy that I've come around on a little bit, you know, just even from doing the Saturday show with Mayo and Raza, that's out on the Media Network as well. If you guys want to go check it out, another free show where we did sort of our first look. But Morikawa, it's just a risk versus reward, Kenny. I like the other guys better than I'm in this range. And, you know, maybe by Wednesday I say, forget it. I'm just going to get shares of Scheffler, Rahm, and Rory and just use three guys. But right now, Rory, Rahm, and a little bit of Morikawa, I think is where I'll go just because JT is going to be extremely popular. I don't want to fade anyone just because of ownership. So what I would say is I think Morikawa can play the same type of game. We've seen him do it in the past. We've seen him show up and win a PGA championship very early on. We see it when he was 8,600, by the way, on DraftKings, if you remember back to that, was extremely high owned and he should have been at 8,600 and then went on and shipped it. But we've also seen him show up in places that he's never seen before, like the Open, and go out and win that as well. So I think Morikawa could be interesting here. I think he'll go a little bit overlooked in large field stuff, especially. And then going back to it, Kenny, you and I have talked about in the past, just two things that fits both of the narratives you and I have always talked about. One, should we just be playing Rahm and Morikawa at every major? We said that before, and we've had that thrown in our faces before. So I think it is a possibility here. Two, I love the Rory Kawa lineups where you play Rory and Morikawa together and then jump over that extremely popular 9K range. And you're only using 20,400 of your salary up top, the two cheaper guys, while fading the most popular likely in Justin Thomas and the two most expensive up above. So I don't feel locked in yet to this range, but I definitely feel pretty good about it this week for a major.
Yeah, the only guy I'm 100% sure of playing right now as of Monday is Scheffler. I will play Scheffler over Rahm. There's no doubt in my mind. The guy's just been playing too good of golf for so long. He's the best around the green in the last 50 rounds of anyone in this 10K range. You know, his short game is solid. His putting well above average. Really, really good on long par threes, which is going to be, you know, it's, it can make or break people's weeks this week with those three really, really long par threes that are over 200 yards that will probably be playing a lot in crosswinds. You know, Scotty's from Texas. You know, he's got that Big 12 thing. He said, actually, this is his favorite course in the world. We've heard that before. That has not gone well.
Yeah.
Okay. I will tell you that. But I don't see any reason to not play Scotty. I don't even think he's going to be like the third highest owned guy in this range. I think JT is going to be up there. I think Rory's going to be up there. Scheffler might be number three or maybe four if Rahm picks up steam. So I have no issues of playing Scotty. I'm going to play him. This is going to be what I'm going to do. He's probably going to be my highest owned. There's no doubt. I'm interested in Rory. I'm not sure about where I'm going to go for the rest. I mean, if Morikawa is going to be the lowest owned, it's really hard for me not to roster someone whose finish, whose worst finish in his last four majors is eighth.
That's how I feel about it too.
You know, it's hard not to go with Morikawa, right?
Yeah, and I said this, I think, last major, maybe the one before. Like, he's just done well at a lot of them. But the point is more of like, it's like an expensive, not anything to do with the player, talking about theory-wise. When we play a Keegan Bradley or a Luke List or Corey Connors before he got much better, where we know, and Max Homa even, where we knew what the risk was. There's a likelihood they missed the cut in their case, or when they do make a cut, they typically have a top 10 or a top five and they give us real upside. This is a little bit different. It's not that Morikawa necessarily has to miss the cut to screw this up. He might just not finish as strong as the other guys around him. That would almost be the worst case or the mistake for a guy like Morikawa. But the upside is there of him winning another, a third major in a very short period of time for this guy. And I think it's worth the risk when you look at the potential for up in this range.
This is what you battle in your mind when you make lineups. Because, okay, when it comes to game theory, you got to think Hovland and Morikawa are going to be two of the lower-owned guys in these top six guys, right? Now, that game theory-wise, that makes them very attractive. Now, the reason why they're going to be two of the lowest-owned is because they have the two worst short games in this section, and two of the worst short games in the field, if we want to be honest, at least in the last 50 rounds. And we are all thinking, we don't know, but we are thinking, almost everyone, that, you know, around the green game, chipping is going to be a very, very, very huge part of this week. So this is where you have to make decisions on your own. Do you go game theory or do you go numbers? Game theory or numbers? That's something that you have to choose on your own. I know there is a huge contingent. There's a contingent that'd be like, okay, game theory, that's the way to do it. If you want to win big bucks, if you want to win GPPs, game theory is the way to go. If you want to min cash, and maybe the numbers is the way to go. And that's always the way some people think. It's something that you're going to have to take on yourself when you build. I personally don't know what I'm doing yet when it comes to these two, because I mean, if they're going to be 8%, 6%, I mean, Jesus. I mean, like I said, Morikawa finished top eight in his last four majors play. It's hard for me. I the only thing I know I'm doing in this 10K range is playing Scotty. That's the one thing I have to wait and see for the ownership for these guys. If it's a huge ownership difference, if Hovland's like 4%, I have to play. I mean, right. I that's what I would think. So I don't know. I right now, Scotty's my number one. JT and Rory seem like the obvious other plays. They seem like 2 and 3 is what it should be. But again, that's not how it depends on how you want to go about making your lineups. Game theory wise, or you're going to go based on numbers and based on what you think is going to happen when it comes to the course. So it's a tough decision to make. But I mean, yeah, we'll have to see. I have to wait until Wednesday. I'll see the ownership and I'll make the rest of my decisions, but I'm going to play Scheffler. He's the main guy up here. Let's go to this 9K range. Now, in the 9K range, I'm going to play three of my cash game cornerstones in this 9K range. The one thing you do have to remember about this event, it is top 70 in ties, okay, and not top 65. Plus, you got about 35 to 40 golfers that you could just eliminate, you know, like PGA Tour club pros, guys that play on foreign tours a bunch, old heads, you know, like former winners and stuff like that. You could probably eliminate down to like 120. So that only means about 50 rosterable golfers at most will be cut. So unless the carnage is crazy, you would expect, higher 66. It's not like it's going to happen. We don't know with the wind and the weather. It could be wave draws. Just thinking about it before the event happens, you would think because of that, 66% is going to go far higher up. So I think placement points are a little bit more important. So when it comes to cash, I'm going to go roster three guys in this 9K range. I'm going a little bit aggressive. As of now, I got three 9K guys, an 8K guy, a low 7K guy, and a low 6K guy. My first cash game cornerstone is going to be Jordan Spieth. The ball striking is too good. He's coming in hot. He's going for the Grand Slam. Again, the fairways a little bit wider could help. But the thing is, he's even been good off the tee here recently. His downfall has been the putter. And of course, we all know he putts pretty damn well on bent. So, you know, maybe I can come back a little bit. I know the last couple of events he's played have been on bent and he hasn't been putting that well, but the ball striking has been so good that even if he puts average, he can win this by a few strokes if he keeps on with the ball striking. So I'm going to go Jordan Spieth, first cash game cornerstone. Second cash game cornerstone is going to be Hideki. Short game, exceptionally solid. Doesn't make too many mistakes. Top 20 in bogey avoidance and double bogey avoidance in the last 50 rounds in this field, coming off a really exceptional Sunday. Looks like he's over his injury 100%. He's healthy. The ball striking should help. The short game should help. So I like Hideki. Also, both those guys, former Masters winners. You have that sort of, people are saying that the correlated course is Augusta. The way I see it too, I believe them. We got a couple of former Masters winners there. And then we got Patrick Cantlin. 5 wins in his last, in the last 18 months or something like that. So you know the guy can win. And some of them, I know the Memorial is sort of bullshit, but I mean, some of them have been decent events. Again, really strong around the green. One of the best short games there is in this field. Rarely makes the big mistake. You'll see him get a couple of bogeys, but you don't see like doubles, triples from Patrick that often. So I like that on a course that's going to play tough. So I like Patrick Cantlin. That's going to be my third cash game cornerstone. If I'm going to play, I'm going to play one other person probably in GPPs in this range. It's either going to be Cam or Xander. Tampa, why don't you sell me on one of them? Which one are you playing?
Smith or Xander?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cam Smith for me. Here's what I'm looking at in this range. I want to go back for 2 seconds. Not to not sell you on someone. For Xander, I think the popularity from the comeback is just going to be too much. Look, if he doesn't make that comeback, he's dead to everybody, and now he's going to be 20% owned. It is what it is. He did make the comeback, so you have to give him credit for that. I'm not taking away. I'm just saying you got to think like that as well. So that's how I'm going to go about it. The only reason I kind of like Cam a little bit, he's not my favorite in this range. He's probably fourth. I'll go through it, maybe even fifth. But I think he's if you find those magic beans that Spieth has sometimes, that's what he can do. This would be a guy that you could go with there. Usually really good around the greens. You talk about the Augusta comparisons, things like that. And to me, look, if we were talking a month ago, he would have been more popular. But if you can't, someone has to get cut out. It was Keegan Bradley a week or two ago, and they're always going to be 20% owned. He can't be. There's already 3 guys everyone's talking about. He's the fourth man. Well, here we've got Spieth, we've got Xander, we've got Decky, and we've got Cantlay. You can't put Smith in the same mix. Someone has to lose the ownership somewhere. And if he's coming in at 10 to 12%, I'm not saying it's a for sure. I'm just saying from my understanding right now of where I think people are going, you'd think he's going to be lower. I want to go back though. Didn't have much love for Hovland on Saturday when I did the show with Mayo and Raza, but I want to bring up a point because it tied in with Morikawa and him. Here's Morikawa first. At the U.S. Open and the Memorial last year, he came in second and fourth when he did gain on approach, around the greens. When he lost almost a stroke at the PGA, he still came eighth. When he lost at the CJ Cup, different courses all day. Just give an example. Second place, lost almost 2 strokes at the Century, still got fifth.
Is this Morikawa or Hovland?
Morikawa, okay. First. When he gained 2 at the Genesis, second, and then who knows what he did at the Masters, but it's tough to come fifth without a good around the green game. So just give an example at the tougher courses, he found his around the green game. And then you think back to that Open. Again, totally different setup, totally different course. My point was, remember the week coming in, he doesn't have it. He can't figure it out. He said he's really trying to find it. Morikawa, what's he do? He goes and finds it and wins. You go back to Hovland. This is interesting. Lost almost 3 strokes around the green at the Players, 9th. Only gained just under a stroke, so barely anything, at the Arnold Palmer, 2nd. Lost almost a stroke and a half at the Genesis, 4th. Who knows at the Mayakoba, it's nothing there. And the Tour Championship, gained under a stroke, 5th. So he's been able to do it. That's the other thing, is if these guys just find it, you even can go back with Hovland, Kenny. Mm-hmm. WGC Mexico, Genesis, and Farmers. He lost around the green all 3 of those tournaments, up to 2 strokes, came 2nd, 5th, and 2nd. Here's the thing about those guys. They could just ball strike the shit out of it and it don't matter. And that's where it's funny. You talk about how Spieth won the tournament at the RBC Heritage without a putter. These guys might find it without this. And again, I know how important it is. I watched all the tapes already. Everything anyone's talked about, any show that's out already, I've watched it. I'm saying you still have to think like that to be willing to take a chance on some of those guys. So in this 9K range, I like Hovland. I like Cantlay. I'm with you on Cantlay. He'll get a little bit of steam at 9,100, of course, maybe even more in the high stakes. So if I was going to make one note here, Cantlay might be a guy to avoid in high stakes, because the higher the ownership goes, I think the worse of a play he gets, and you can either just pivot off of him or you can avoid the range altogether. He's obviously a great all-around golfer, so that's why he's going to get the ownership. And then Matsuyama is just too good all around. He still showed us the form. I prefer to go to him than Xander. That's just me, because I think Xander we're chasing a little bit more than Deki. We're recognizing that he is healthy again. We know what his game is like. Go those stats. He doesn't have very many events where he loses. He did actually lose the greens.
The funny thing about Xander, though, is it's not like he's been playing horribly. I mean, if you look at it, like the two events with the strong fields, yes, he missed the cut, the Masters and the Players. But outside of that, in his last, five events, 5th, 12th, 13th, 3rd?
Not bad. I think
not bad, right?
Miscut at the Masters, miscut at the Players. And Phoenix then Open, might as well play Brooks if you're saying that case for Xander. He came 3rd there too. And then 34th at Farmers, 12th at Set. They're good, I'm saying, and I get it. And look, the funny part is too, Kenny, back to round out this 9K range. I went to our preview from the start of the season. I picked Xander to win the PGA Championship.
Yeah.
You picked Hovland.
I picked Hovland.
And yeah, I keep thinking
I keep thinking Hovland's in the 10K range, and he's not. I actually might play Hovland over Cam, because I keep thinking Hovland's like 10K right on the dot, and he's not. Just because, you know, of course, everyone should know that this is like, you know, he went to Oklahoma State. He should be used to the weather. He should be used to the wind. He's probably played this course a bunch of times before when he was in college. Same with Scottie Scheffler, both those Big 12 guys out there. So they have experience. So I got no – so I think I might move my favorite – my GP play from Cam to Hovland in here and play Hovland and maybe skip Cam. Well, I think that might be the way I go.
He looks good if you can just remove the around the green game shit. We do it
everything
else.
That argument you made is very, very strong.
We do it for everybody else with different categories of their game. Yeah. But I know it's tough here.
Losing strokes, bunches of strokes around the green, still finishing top 5, still finishing top 10. I mean, you know, it says something about how good the rest of his game is. And, you know, you could be right. He could be used to the weather. He could know how to play around the wind and hits more greens than other people, both of them, Morikawa and Hovland. I'm beginning to enjoy those two guys a little bit more after talking to you. That's another reason why I love the show, because I get to listen to Tambo all day, and then it just makes me a better player. All right, so let's go to this 8K range. I'm going to go with my favorite play in this range. It's going to be Joaquin Neiman at 8,500. The one thing that, you know, his around the green game has improved exponentially. I think 3 years ago, he was outside the top 100. I think this year, he's inside the top 25 in strokes gained around the green. The one thing that really put me on him, and I know this is just one shot, but that one chip that went viral that he had last week at the Byron Nelson, when it was an elevated green, the pin was maybe only about four steps from the back edge, and he flew the green elevated on a really tight lie, and he hits this like scoop shot where the ball lands right on the front of the green, and he has so much contact, it just spins, and the ball stops right next to the hole.
Yeah,
that shot's impossible. Like if you miss, the only way you can hit a shot like that is if you are supremely confident in your short game, like crazy confident, like Jordan Spieth in his prime, Patrick Reed in his prime, Seve Ballesteros in his prime, tight, confident around the green is the only time you would even think about hitting that shot. Like if you're a groove low or a groove high, you're going to fat it, it's going to roll down the hill, or you're going to thin it and it's going to go all the way through the bunker on the other side of the green. Because he had to swing hard to get that spin. It was one of the sickest chips I've seen that I can remember, just because of how difficult to do what he did is. And to me, that one shot just proves how confident he is around the green. Now, that's not the only reason I like him, because, you know, low ball flight, piercing wind, you can pierce through the wind, low ball flight, the ball is going to roll for days, you know, with his low ball fight and the top spin he has on it and those firm greens. You know, his iron game is probably the worst part of his game, but he's gained strokes in five of his last seven with his approach. I think, you know, you see a lot of first-time major winners, you know, at this event. I can see Neiman winning this event. I bet him at 45-1 this week, and I like him. I will use him in cash this week. He's one of my favorite plays on the board. So I do love Joaquin Neiman. Lowry and Berger, they look like they're going to be the chalk. You know, Lowry, both of them, of course, if you go based on that thing where, you know, no winner has played, you know, as every winner has played at least one of the two events the 2 weeks before, maybe, you know, they're not in that group, but at that price, they don't really need to win. I didn't bet on either of them, but I, you know, they make sense from a DFS standpoint, unless they get crazy ownership numbers. And then maybe you can shift over to a Neiman. To a Tiger, you know, maybe, you know, so those guys are going to be popular. I'm not sure if I'm going to go that route. I like Hatton. So, you know, Neiman and Hatton, the two foreign guys, are probably going to be my two favorite plays in the 8K range. Hatton just has, I feel like, the game for this, as long as he just stays out of his head, you know, well above average with his irons, you know, Tita Green, he's solid, really, really good short game, really good putter. You know, again, another guy who you think has the talent to possibly win a major. And the PGA is, you know, a great stepping stone for all these for a first time type of winner. So I like those two guys a lot. One question though, I do have, what do you do with Bryson? What was the Wingfoot, right? He won a Wingfoot. That was another Gil Hance design, right? He's actually the best putter on lightning fast bent grass greens in the field. Do you trust him at all? I know
he's, I don't, he's I giving don't updates know about play. He said today he's going to give it a test and
so
see.
So we don't. I haven't really heard if he's going to play or not. But I mean, if he does, is it just not worth it at all? Even if he's 2% owned?
No, I think if he plays, it's, you know, you could try something out. But I just don't think he will. Like, it's up to that. It's your decision. Kind of there to me is like him or Tiger. Because Tiger's right there for $100 less. And like I said, I think Tiger looks healthier, looks stronger, looks better. Everyone who talks about it says that this should be a much easier walk than Augusta. You know, he's way different. Last time he was plus 120 or even minus 105 by closing number to make the cut. This time he's like minus 150 to make the cut. So I see others are on the other side of that. I'm just saying, I think there's more interest here. Just seeing him around the course, hitting that stinger, knows the course very well, obviously, a champion here, I believe multiple times. So just, you know, in general, this course, very familiar to him. So I think, you know, that would be the decision. I know it sounds crazy, but I would almost probably trust Tiger more than Bryson. Bryson just, you know, he just hasn't been playing. You need every aspect of your game. And the thing about Bryson, four full days with a lot of extra that's needed, the around the green game, the putter, the irons, the wedges, all the stuff that he's going to have, feels like a lot to figure it out versus Tiger. These higher scores, which we're definitely going to see here, I don't know if it's going to get to double digits, but if it's 8 under or something like that, I mean, that should lean even further into his pocket or in his hand. So I'm not high on either of them. I just, to answer your question, but one guy I am sort of high, go back on up to the top, is Will Zalatoris. And it's funny because last week I thought he was a terrible play. Like by the time it got to Wednesday and his ownership, where it was like 25 to 30% in places, it was just like, didn't make any sense. It's a birdie fest where he's going to have to keep up with everyone. He's already a bad putter. There was legitimate winners like Neiman right around him. Even Burns, I thought, at the ownership, they both ended up missing the cut. But at same ownership, at least Burns is a winner on tour. And then, of course, you had Decky and Xander for just a couple $100 more. And that's the guys that ended up being up at the top. So I think this course sets up much better for him. This goes back to your conversation. And our, you know, anyone who's new doesn't know this, but you and I have talked about it the last few times now, where his numbers without the wins are very similar to those guys up in 10 and 11K range, or the guys we discussed in depth in Hovland, in Morikawa, and of course the guy at the very top and the best in the world right now in Scottie Scheffler. So at 8,900, you don't got to win this thing. You don't got to come
Of all the golfers that missed the cut that really hurt people last week, Zalatoris, Burns, and Gooch, those are probably like the big three, right? Yeah. Zalatoris actually still ball strike pretty damn well.
Yeah, it was all putter, Gooch, same as all.
He was just horrible putting like he normally is. Ball striking was still there. Now the other two guys, ball striking was not very good.
Hey, think about Zalatoris, right? Quick on that, faster bent grass greens at the Masters, where you know that's what he's putting on here again. Again, I did hear last night that these greens won't be as fast as some might think, right? Because otherwise what will happen is over the weekend
with the wind, yes,
and things like that, it's going to get even tougher to hold greens, and then it screws everything up. So they're not going to go crazy, but they'll be faster for sure. I'm just saying, and they still take creativity, which not the same undulation exactly, or not the same as the Masters. But the point would be is if his ball striking's on and the putting is sort of neutralized even a little bit, again, I think that leans into his favor at 8,900. So I do like that. I think Lowry is going to be very popular, but I think for good reason. I think if you actually look at some of the models, the numbers, things that you don't have to look by that. You just look at your eye test and just think about the tournaments that he plays well in. Incredible around the green game, has been playing incredible in general. Great form this season. Again, maybe doesn't win it, but at 8,700, he could be your fourth golfer in some of these lineups, which is crazy. So even with ownership, I still see him rate out pretty nice. And then here's my thing, Kenny, like I don't mind your Hatton call. I like Connors and Louis at the bottom, but the difference between Berger and Neiman, I want to get your take on this quick, because right now it seems that people are just, you know, they're not completely going away from a guy. So even though most will say, okay, Neiman burned guys on Sunday at the Byron Nelson. Well, I've already heard multiple people. And even on the top of my mind, like you said, that sort of chip that went viral, he's got the best around the green game in the world now coming out of this tournament, right? Because of that one shot. No, yeah, but it does feel
but
like
it is good.
It's damn good.
I think he's like, top, I think he's 12th. I think he's 12th this year in strokes gained around the green.
Yes.
And I think 3 years ago, he was like 120 something.
Better
so
on
the
bent.
The improvement is crazy. And he's a better putter on bent.
Yeah. So there's reasons to go there anyway. I'm just saying, I think.
And then the low ball fight, if it's windy as shit, I mean, would really help. It would pierce through everything. I mean, like, I just think Neiman just fits this course. I think he can win, and I'd like the bet at 45-1 a lot.
So one guy I like there, because he's right above him, is Berger, and that's what I was going to ask. Maybe Berger, you could play Berger and Neiman and get off Lowry. I'm just saying with Lowry's ownership, but it feels like Berger actually could end up coming in a little bit lower owned when you start to factor in all these names we're mentioning. And one thing about Berger, we used to always say with Berger and Adam Scott, we talked about it plenty on the show, where when they get into these stronger fields, that's why they're only coming in 20th. But at 8,600, and now I want to say this about Berger's. I think, again, people lump him into Bermuda greens and Florida and easier courses and easier fields. But it seems like he's been better this last year coming in. And so now I wonder if it's time to shine in that aspect. And then you go back to one other course we didn't talk about. And it's funny enough, Xander's in the mix in this one as well. But if you go back to Shinnecock, Berger was right in the mix. Started with actually a opening round 76. A lot of the guys, like for example, Brooks won after an opening round 75, but then Berger went calmed right down 71, 66, 73, ended up coming in six. And that was again, way more over par with everybody than we're likely to see here, but just shimmy the board up some with the scores. It's still going to be tough. And so that's the idea where maybe it's good enough to come through. And that's what I'm saying. I kind of like this 8K range. We talked about it earlier. You guys want to leave a comment on the YouTube channel, let us know your favorite play in this 8K range and why, or tell us why you hate our plays in the range while you're telling us you like yours. I'll go through and read all the comments for sure. But I just am curious about your thought there on the Berger take, because we like him, but we've said all along in these tougher fields, he doesn't really come through. He ends up coming through at like the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, where of course he ships it over McNealy because no one else is really there. What are your thoughts on Berger here before we move on?
I mean, just when it comes to the numbers, I mean, like he comes number two in my model. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I figured just because of that, he would be popular. But if he's
possible.
Not, yeah, yeah. But I mean, if Neiman and Lowry, you know, gather up a lot of steam, then he could be the odd man out in ownership. And then it could be, I mean, and the thing is, I don't think he's a bad play either. So, I mean, even if you like him, I feel like even if his ownership's high, you should go ahead and play him because he's a damn good golfer and that's a good price. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I personally like Neiman and Lowry better. This week, it could just be me. I don't know. It could be biased because of that one fucking shot. It could be that. And you know, in my head, you know, there's no doubt about that. But real quick,
the bottom: Homa, Connors, Louis. Any of those three?
I like Hatton. Hatton's a guy.
I know you like Hatton. I'm asking Hatton's about the other three.
If I'm gonna play, I'd probably go Connors.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me look again. Hold on. I'm looking at this wrong. No, give me Usti.
Yeah, I'm committed to Louis. That's all I was going to ask. I'm going to go back to him. I know he withdrew from the Masters, which was interesting, but in general, you know, majors, moxie, and just long-term, his upside, his skill set, 8K, we want Louis when he's lower owned. I'm still going to take a shot at him based on long-term and the fact that less are going to this range. And again, they'll be on Connors there, which I have no problem with, but Louis still a fine play at 8,000. And then of course the guys just below, take us there, Kenny, upper 7K range. You got, you know, Fitzpatrick, Finau, guys like that, that are going to be popular as well. What do you like here in the 7K range?
I mean, Fitzpatrick makes sense on a course that where you think even par golf might be good, especially with that wind. It just seems like he's the new Jim Furyk or something like that. You know, he just goes out there, even par golf, does his thing, and not many big numbers, not many bogeys, par it out, the occasional birdie, do his thing, finish top 10, top 15. It just seems like something that can be pretty easily done for Fitzpatrick this week. But I like the guys a little bit lower. I don't play him that much often. Tommy Fleetwood, Tommy lad, with a really nice short game. And people are saying, oh, he's been playing like ass. Well, before the RBC Heritage, he had five straight top 25s. Five straight top 25s. And he actually improved each time. So if you look before the Byron Nelson, so we go back 5 weeks before the Byron Nelson. He finished 20th at the Arnold Palmer, 22nd at the Players, 16th at Valspar, 14th at Augusta, 10th at RBC Heritage. You know, the form is there. I don't think because, you know, when you first look at the course and you think of his game, you're like, maybe the course is too long for him. But like I said in this course preview, this course is like sneakily not that long. You know what I'm saying? It's just like five holes. It's really put a lot of yardage on this course. And you look at Tommy and how he's been, especially with that short game, it's been very, very good. He's gained strokes with his irons in four straight. Gained strokes with his with off the tee in three out of his last four. I don't think he can win, but at 7,600, you don't need him to win. Top 10, top 20 could help your lineup out. And I'm also going to go – those are two guys I like in the upper. Go ahead. Who do you like?
Yeah, I like the Fitzpatrick call. Again, I think he'll get popular as the week goes on, but he probably should. Like bogey avoidance, just dominant, scrambling in general. The only thing he's not really good at is longer irons, but does it really matter when the rest of your game is that good? And if you are missing greens, look, everyone's going to be missing greens here or rolling off.
You're talking about Fitzpatrick?
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is, okay, his longer irons aren't the best, but he's one of the best from 200 to 225 yard on par threes.
Right.
So his par three efficiency for 200 to 225 is top 10 in this field in the last 50 rounds.
Which I like that even more because it just shows he can do it. But my point is exactly the same point is that, you know, if he doesn't have it in the bag, that one particular skill set, he's got the rest to go with it. And I think that, like I said, you mentioned it earlier, but it's going to neutralize a little bit when all these guys are missing greens in general. We have a very low greens and regulation percentage, and he's got the game to flash around it. And it's just what he does. We want like an 8-under, 10-under type score for a guy like Fitzpatrick. So hopefully that's the case. If the wind comes out, usually benefits him. So there's that. I like the Fleetwood call. Actually, he has himself a pretty, you know, strong around the green game. Everything else is there. And then Keegan Bradley, just been playing some really good golf lately. He's got everything too. He's solid around the green game, solid tee to green in general, always bogey avoidance. Everything just lines up for Keegan Bradley. So I think he's interesting. I was going to ask you about Cameron Young. We debated this on the Mayo Show, Kenny, just about, overpriced. Is he even actually going to end up popular because everyone says that? Like, is, you know, the guy seemingly has shown up at every tournament, but the ones he did not show up at and missed the cut were the tougher challenges, the Masters and the Players.
I'm not really that interested in him, especially if he gains ownership. I mean, the thing about it is like, okay, he's really good at like getting lots of birdies, lots of drafting points. That's not something I'm really looking at this week. You know what I'm saying? He's below average around the greens. His iron game's even just, you know, below average. It's not that great. I'm not the biggest fan of him this week. And I've heard some people talk about him. I don't know what his ownership will be, but I'm not going to play him. I'd rather play Keegan, just like you, at $7,500. Again, you know, when it comes, I mean, he well above average in chipping, you know, around the green. And I'm a fan of, you know, the accuracy and the length off the tee and then strong iron game, you know, this could be something that he could do well at. So I do like Keegan off the tee. I like Keegan at 7,500. Other guys down a little bit below, if you look, Billy Horschel, you know, really good season. you know, a lot of little top finishes. You know, we've seen some guys sort of fly out of nowhere, like the Duffners, the Keegans, in these PGA championship. He can sort of fold into that mold and maybe do pretty well at this event. So I do like Billy Horschel down here. My final cash game, Cornerstone. I was wavering back and forth all day between Sergio Garcia and Russell Henley. Now, Sergio had that long stretch. He was really, really poor at majors after his win at Augusta. But he's finished top 25 in his last three majors played. The weird thing is he's missed seven straight cuts in a row at the PGA Championship. Not sure what that means. I'm still going to play him in GPPs. It's not going to stop me from that. But that sort of stopped me from playing him in cash. So I went Henley. You look at Henley. He's made his last iron game strong. You know, second shot course, if this really is a second shot course, he should be fine. You know, tee to green, top 10 in tee to green, avoids the big numbers, really good on long par threes. And he's made his last 12 cuts at majors in the United States. You take away the Open Championship. The last 12 majors Russell Henley has played in the United States, he is in a perfect 12 for 12 in made cuts. That's what I'm looking for as my cheapest cash game cornerstone. But I still think he has top 25, top 30 upside, which would help. So my cash game cornerstones this week, they're going to be Jordan Spieth at 9,600. Hideki Matsuyama at 9,200. Patrick Cantlay at 9,100. Russell Henley at 7,200. Leaves you $14,900 left in your lineup to fill out the rest of your cash lineup for the two spots. So those are the guys I like in that lower range. Who do you like in the lower range? What do you think about Patrick Reed? I have heard grumblings that this course favors a draw. Okay, you know Patrick hits the draw. You know he's exceptionally good at least in his career. He has been very, very good around the greens. One of the best putters on bent fast greens in this field. Do you take a flyer on a 3% on Patrick Reed?
I thought no, but when you bring it up too, the other thing I was looking at, the same at the Shinnecock leaderboard, he came fourth. And then you know what his Masters moxie is, which we've already talked about, that being a comparison. And when you look at who's around.
And the price.
I was just going to say.
If he was like 8,100, probably too expensive.
Well, you're comparing it to like Matt Wolf is more than him. Got Sepp Straka, who's playing better lately. I get all this. I'm saying, but at a major, you can sometimes take on some of these risks. So, you know, there's always going to be these conversations. I don't love them. I don't hate them. Like what you just said, I could go there, but there's a lot of guys I like more. So I love your call. I like Billy Horschel. I think he's very interesting. A couple things you brought up. The only thing he doesn't have when you stat it out is basically driving distance, but I don't care because everything else is so strong. And then he's even really good top 10 in those shorter, the wedge game that you talked about earlier that was brought up, where I think that's kind of interesting to add into the mix. A great scrambler, avoids bogeys, great on approach, all that stuff lines up. And again, he's going to get lumped into Florida, Bermuda, Billy, all these stuff, but I don't think that's true. Gary Woodland, same type of thing. He's almost like, to me, he's like Lowry for cheaper. He's basically done what Lowry's been doing. He's got that low stinger for the wind. He's got the ability to have the around the green game. We know at US Opens, he can definitely flash and shine. So this is a PGA championship, but it's either way. It's a guy that can come out and play a tough course and play well in a major. Jason Kokrak, I think, is interesting at 7,300. Sergio is a flyer, like you mentioned. But then I love the Henley call, too, because Henley, third in approach. This is just the last 3 months. Third in approach, 10th in greens in regulation. Overall, top 20 tee to green, and third with that wedge game. So you look at that, and then his around the green games, top 30 as well. I think he's a guy that could surprise here at 7,200 that, you know, some people want to play him. Feels like they're getting a little bit tired of it though at this point, and this would be the spot to hop back on. So I like that. And then right at 7,000, I was going to ask you, I think this is the next decision point. You've got Noren, Varner, Power, Harmon, and Bezuidenhout all sort of seemingly would fit like a tougher course, like a Fitzpatrick type mold, you know, come from behind, score just enough, hit that leaderboard by the end, enough placement points, which we didn't talk a lot about earlier, but going to be extremely important this week, obviously. So what are you doing just at stone minimum 7K? What are you doing at that price?
I like Noren. you know, playing really good at tougher courses, it seems like. It's around the green game, solid, you know. Also, you don't really see the big numbers once again when it comes with Norm. Not too many doubles, not too many triples. I think he can grind it out there, do his thing. I like Norm at 7K. But Varner's been playing really good golf, like, almost all year. I know, you know, he's been in the mix in a bunch of tournaments, usually fades on the weekend, but I don't think you can ignore Varner at 7K. So those two guys sort of pop for me, but I'd probably go Norn as my favorite in that range. What about you of those 7Ks?
You just reminded me of something. So I was trying to look it up here right quick.
Well, I'll keep on going. I'll move.
No, good. It's all good. I was going to say that was a different tournament, but no, this is Bethpage Black, actually, where Varner, remember, he was actually in the final group. Yeah. Of the PGA Championship that year, and then shot that 81 as Brooks, mm-hmm. his partner in that final group, went on to win. So that's mm-hmm. what it made me think of. But I did have Varner start up here, just looking at it. Like, all the stats are solid across the board. Everything in the rolling stats, the last 6 months, the long term, all that, he does sort of shine a little bit. And I don't know, it doesn't seem like a spot where people are going to want to play a bunch of Varner, especially when you've got Norin and guys like that right here in this range. So power is the one I'm struggling with. Feels like we finally figured this guy out last week. Another birdie fest. He shows up. All the harder events, he sort of missed the cut or not played well at. So if he's going to pick up some of the ownership, maybe get a little bit different there and go with a guy like Varner or Norin, who you mentioned. Hoagie even last week. Sometimes he can show up. So I think he would be interesting. And then other than that, nothing else for me in the 7K range, Kenny.
All right, let's move down to the 6K range. Why don't you go ahead and start?
Yeah, not much. It's definitely not a range I'm extremely excited about here. I'm going to make some decisions as the week goes on. But as of now, just looking at it, like, I don't know if you go back to like, so Munoz and KH Lee, nobody's going to want to play them after last week, even though, again, you talked about it earlier. It's the opposite effect. Like, everyone wants to play Spieth and Decky and Xander because of what they did at the Byron Nelson. Now they're top talents anyway, whether they did or didn't there, people would have played them. It's almost like the opposite sometimes for these guys that just played well at a birdie fest, like a Munoz or a KH Lee, where it's like, oh, they can't do that again, but they're priced accordingly. They're down here. So they're interesting. Aaron Wise at 6,800 could get some popularity though. So he's someone I could come off of easily. Davis Riley, just better than people think. You got to give him a little bit of a skill set.
Too well, the guy just has so many high finishes.
Well, yeah, and I think when you look at Davis Riley, maybe it's a little bit preemptive, but like back in the day when we were talking about it earlier, and like this is further back, but you go back, it was like Xander Schauffele that year at the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, where he ended up being like, he was like 6,800 back then, and that won the guy the Millie. It's like you just have to take who's the guy that you believe in long term as a talent and take some shots on them. And to me, there's two of them right there at 6,800 and 67. It's Davis Riley at 6,800 and it's Mito Pereira at 6,700. He's just, they're cheap for guys that I think we're going to see in the 8K range a lot, even in stronger fields. And then eventually who knows where it goes from there, but I think we're going to see that a lot. Sam Horsfield just won the Soudal this weekend, just passed now his third DP World Tour win. So maybe he brings some of that form over. Keith Mitchell is a guy down here. And then not too much else, man. The other decision really comes down to that $6,300 range. So maybe we start backwards here and you roll with that. But what are you doing with like Lanto, Adam Hadwin, or even Ryan Fox, who finished, I believe, second at the Soudal to the aforementioned Sam Horsfield? So I don't know. Lanto and Hadwin were the opposite. They were both sort of a little bit popular last week. Hadwin missed the cut. Lanto sort of did his thing over the weekend. This would seem like a better fit for Hadwin, though. So what are your thoughts at 6,300?
I like Lanto. You know, the one thing about it is he's actually in the last 50 rounds. Now, when it comes to lightning fast bank grass greens, he's like the third best putter in the field. You know, when it comes to the last 50 rounds on that, he has 25 rounds. So it's a little bit less than some, but still, it's not like too small of a sample size, you know, and he putts really well on these, and he's been making a whole bunch of cuts here recently, and you know, he's been playing pretty good golf, so I don't mind Lanto. And the thing is, like I said, placement points are going to be extremely important. So when it comes to cash, like my four right now, I have my four cash game cornerstones: Lanto and Joaquin Neiman in my cash game lineup, and you know, so Spieth, Cantlay, Decky, Neiman, I think all can win You know what I'm saying? So you got four guys up there, 8,500 or more that I think can win. I think Henley could top 25, and then we just need Lanto to make the cut. And of course, we talked about how, you know, 66 might be a little bit higher just because there's only about, you know, maybe 50 golfers that are going to be cut that are rosterable, 40 to 50. So I don't mind going in that type of lineup construction when it comes to cash. I'm not going to say that's how it's going to end for me on Wednesday. The four Cascade Cornerstones are going to stay. You know, I could change my mind about Neiman and Lanto, but right now they are the ones that are in my cash game lineup. Other guys I do like in the 6K range, you know, Bern Weisberger. You know, he's shown his mettle on the European Tour. He's almost made Ryder Cups. The talent level is there. Short game is solid. At that, we've seen him at a major or two be up there in the first few rounds. So I like Bern. I like Mackenzie Hughes, another guy who's really, really good at these fast, hard, firm, tight courses. So I'll go with that for your Canadian brethren over there. And I'm back to a couple of old guys, Matt Kuchar and Kevin Na. I can go just because, you know, like I said, this course, I'm not sure if golfers are going to overpower it. I don't know how it's going to play in that range. Like I wasn't sure how much emphasis I was going to put on strokes gained off the tee when it comes to my model at this event, because I just don't know how golfers are going to react, how they're going to do it. Because I mean, back in the day, it was basically all less than driver. You know, but now with all these new, you know, remodels and Gil Hands and the trees being gone and the fairways being wider, it looks like it's possible that, you know, you see more driver off the tee. But then again, you're going to need to hit fairways. Oh, man, this tournament's going to be great. There's just so many factors in it. You know, it's sort of blowing my mind right now. And so I think I can go back to those two type of golfers who will just grind it out and who have really, really good short games where if the wind does blow, they can get it up and down and do well. So Kuchar and Na seem like that type of mold. And, you know, Kuchar's been playing really well. So what, three top 12s in his last four events. And, you know, Na has, you know, I don't know if he has major winning upside, but the guy can win. The guy has upside. And at that price, I don't mind him. Anybody else here?
No, I just want to try and sell you on Hadwin over Lanto quick, because I think this is interesting for everyone just digging in, because I've done so much of it. But this is pretty crazy. So over the last eight events, Hadwin has gained on around the greens 7 of 8. Lanto has lost in all eight in a row around the greens. Then you go back to the last 3 months total stats, which puts Hadwin 9th around the green. Lanto's 106th around the green. You go to overall tee to green, Adam Hadwin's 30th, Lanto's 59th. And then you circle back and go forget the Byron Nelson, but at the RBC Heritage, Hadwin 26th, Lanto miscut. Valero, Hadwin 4th, Lanto 53rd. Valspar, Adam Hadwin 7th, Lanto miscut. The Players, Lanto miscut. Adam Hadwin 9th. Gaining on approach 4 of his last 5. I just think that's an interesting spot to go back. Well, where he just made me
change. You just made me change my cash lineup. I'm changing from Lanto to Hadwin right now. There you go. You talked me into it there, brother. That's why I like doing this show.
You know what? I just don't talk to me. I don't think you need this range, but I think for cash, it's a great idea. And in tournaments, it can make a lot of things work. I'm just saying when people do this, I don't think it'll get popular enough. I think people are already worried about like, who's going to be the $6,300 popular guy. And that most are going to be like 6 or 7% or something. Yeah. And that's where you can pretty much do whatever you want.
And so I don't care in cash. When it comes
especially
to
in cash, so, you don't care. Exactly.
Yeah. But I mean, I sort of want Neiman in my cash lineup because I like him so much. And then you throw the other four golfers in there. I mean, it's pretty solid 5. And then you can just go in and hope either Hadwin or Lanto, whichever one I pick at the end of the day, makes the cut. That's basically what I'm trying to do, and have, you know, a couple of these guys finish top 5 maybe. And then you do that, and even with a 5 or 6, you got that, you still might be able to do it too, because I think the finishing position is going to be very, very important without that many birdies, without that many birdieable holes on the course.
What if I told you this last thing, and then we'll move on? Neiman and Hadwin, or would you take a 8K guy with like Noren? So you could do like Fitzpatrick Noren. You could do Connors Noren. That's basically the same.
I just like Neiman so much that I'm going to stick with them. Like I said, Neiman's like one of my favorite players on the board. And I think he can win So I am going to go ahead and have him on this lineup. So I'm going to have a $6,400 golfer or less. Sure.
Yep, perfect. Let's go to the bets. What do you got?
All right. So bets for me this week, I got, hold on, let me log back in. I got Spieth at 22-1. I got Cam Smith at 20-1. I got Hideki Matsuyama 40-1. Joaquin Niemann 45-1. Hatton 60-1.
I like it. You know, at the start of the season, we were worried about Matt Wolf. I also went back and when I was listening to the season preview, we were like, oh, Matt Wolf, 90-1. Got to think about getting this guy because he'll be whatever. And now he's 175-1.
I made that bet when we talked about it. So I have Matt Wolf at 90-1 from like December 12th or some shit like that. Yeah. Now you can get him like 100, 120, 130, 150.
So I've got two from back then. It was the Homa 125. Now he's like 65-ish, 66, whatever. Nice. And then I got Gooch at 150. He's still like 100 in some places, and maybe more. So nothing too special there. Today, I bet Woodland and Norin. Woodland 125, Norin 140, both with the top eight each way. The other two were top five. And then I did not bet anything else yet. So I'm going to wait and see here. Like right now I can get a boost. Like Xander at 28 is interesting to me, you know, a couple bets like that, but the numbers just nothing really excites me. So I'm probably going to plant something bigger down on somebody once I decide by Wednesday. All the final bets when Mayo does his final bets on the Wednesday live show chat at 12 Eastern here on the Mayo Media Network. So stay tuned.
I want to keep room for some live bets, but again, I was listening to Andy Lack's podcast. Go check it out. And he said that like every professional tournament that's ever been played here, the leader after 36 holes has won.
Yeah. And it's like, even like Southern it's Hills. Actually sooner than that. I was reading something else and it's like after Thursday, it's not settled, but like, if you don't have a good first round, you're pretty much, I think
the leader after 36 holes at every event played at Southern Hills has won this event.
Yeah.
So it's not great. Like a chase type of.
It just points out too, though. It goes that's a great thing to point out, though, because it goes to the fact of complete game. Whoever's on their game enough to lead at this place after 2 days is that good of a game, and it's that tough of a course that they just go on to ship the thing. So I don't hate that, but I'm not really saving for in tournament. I'm gonna make some decisions over the next day or two here because I think it's, you know, just gotta wait and see if I can get some boosts. Maybe the numbers shake up a little bit, but I don't love anything. Like I don't love this board. Right now, as it is, like Hideki dropped. You got a great number there. Niemann is not a good, like, I don't love the number. So it's just nothing I want to slam a bunch of money on for no reason.
Yeah, I think 40-1, 45-1 for Niemann, I think is great. I think 40-1 for Hideki is great also.
Your numbers are excellent. That's like Hideki on my book right now is 28.
Well, I bet that
like, I don't care.
When Hideki was making his move yesterday. So it was prior to, you know, him finishing what, runner up or whatever, third. I like that number. I like my bets. I like my card. I'm keeping it under 60-1. So we'll see how it goes.
I think it's good.
One and done. I think I have Scheffler left. I think I have Scheffler and JT left. I'll probably play one of each. I'm playing.
I've got Scheffler, so I'm definitely using Scheffler here, especially if I don't play him. I like the hedge of that. It doesn't really get me much, but I worked last week with Spieth. So I'm going to try it again this week with Scheffler. So that's all we got.
All right. That sounds good. You can find me on Twitter at KendoVT. You can find my article on gupscorner.com. It is out already. My course preview on Wednesday, I'll release my favorite GPP plays, my cash game cornerstones once again, if they change, and my final betting card, see what I add. Also on Wednesday, I will be on the E9 Emergency 9 podcast on Gups Corner for members only. We're going to go over the cool thing about Gup's Corner when it comes to weather, Gup has this thing called the heat map, where depending on, it'll give you like where the golfer is teeing off and how the weather and the wind will possibly affect them. And it's color coded. Like green means they're going to be in the good draw. Yellow means there could be, you know, in somewhere in between. Red is you probably don't want to play them. So he has these specific tools for weather, all these, you know, great tools in the green machine. I will be on the E9 podcast. We'll talk about ownership. We'll talk about the weather. We'll talk about everything going on. Last second moves, who, you know, any changes from what we've done on Monday. So make sure you go to GupsCorner.com, use promo code Kenny, save yourself 30% on a membership. You also include a 7-day risk-free trial. So if you sign up on Wednesday, you can get two tournaments for free, the PGA Championship and next week, if you want to check it out. So go over to GupsCorner.com.
And you can find me on Twitter at Toe Tag and Tambo. Follow me there. Turn on notifications on Wednesday mornings. I, of course, put out the favorite thread that everybody likes, Tambo's Tidbits. It's got 15 of the favorite things I find throughout the free content each week. It's good for everybody. If you can just do me a favor, retweet the first tweet, the one that says Tambo's Tidbits with the breakdown. Retweet that. It helps me out in these majors and things like that. A lot of good exposure, helps build my following, personal brand, things like that. So definitely appreciate it. Other than that, rumpiersports.com. Talked about it earlier. We'll have the show on Wednesday, the premium show breaking down weather, exposures, tournament strategy, roster construction. I think everyone struggles with the most, get the right guys, but the wrong setup. That's what we spend our time on that show. So if you haven't signed up at rumpiersports.com yet, head on over there now. Use promo code DGEN50, D-E-G-E-N-5-0. Get yourself signed up. Get 50% off your first month. All sports, one price. And then, of course, the other shows on the Mayo Media Network. Wednesday, I talked about it a bunch, 12 Eastern with Mayo live in studio, going through the final breakdown for the week. And then, of course, Thursday night, doing the round two showdown shows for free as well here on the Mayo Media Network. That's
sweat
all
show. Week, guys. Cut sweat show this week.
I don't know if there's going to be. We're going to we'll probably talk about it on Wednesday. We'll see.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So it's the second major. This course is going to be fun. It's going to be a great watch. I'm really looking forward to this. I think I feel good about it. So that means I'm going to win absolutely nothing. But still, it should be a great time. Let's win some motherfucking money. DGEN Nation.
I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds. Sipping on Ciroc, trip them up with the words. I done popped the Molly and I think it's be my third.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.